Hi, welcome to Cloud Cover. My name is Ryan Dunn.
And I'm Steve Marks, fresh back from my trip to Japan. Contrary to what Ryan says, I was neither Iron Chef nor recording a commercial. I was presenting at TechFest 2010 in Japan, and I was talking about developing Windows Azure apps, and then I met with a local user group and did some stuff with Java and Windows Azure. So that's what I was doing, all rumors to the contrary. But thanks for joining us.
Is it true they had a translator on you?
It's true that someone was, at least someone spoke Japanese after I spoke English. I don't know that they were translating or just making stuff up, but there was some translation.
Well, that's actually quite amazing, because not only did they have to speak English, but they had to speak Smarks.
That's right. They had to understand what the heck it was that I was talking about.
Fantastic. Okay. So... If you want to interact with the show, you can always reach us at @CloudCoverShow on Twitter.
A big thanks to both people who have done that already. We appreciate the feedback that you've given us. Please do say hi. It's cool. And then, you know, we think that people are actually watching the show, which is good.
That's fantastic. Or additionally, you can actually reach us on our Wildcat BBS. 9600 baud and higher only, please.
What's the phone number for that, Ryan?
425-555 Smarks.
All right.
What do we got going this week, Steve?
This week we are going to talk about worker roles with input endpoints. And so I'm going to show you how you can listen for web traffic without using IIS. And of course, we're going to do some news in just a minute, and we're going to finish up with a tip about how to find the size of your SQL Azure databases. So let's go to the first news, which is this blog post that I came across called Cloud Storage Showdown Part 2. And this is over on cloudharmony.com. And basically what the Cloud Harmony guys have done is they've taken a look at the performance of different cloud storage providers, and they've done this over the course of a month, tests from all around the globe. And the thing that I really wanted to point out about this is if you go look at the numbers and you pay attention to the Windows Azure storage numbers, you'll see that it really is a best practice to co-locate the computation you're doing in the cloud with the storage that you have in the cloud. And what I mean by that is choose an affinity group when you go deploy these, or at least make sure that they're in the same subregion, because you get drastically better performance between your compute and your storage if they are in the same subregion.
Yeah, I mean, there's a factor of 10 and more in some of these cases.
Yeah, there's a real big difference. Yeah. So you can go look at the numbers to see exactly what those things look like, and of course to compare also with some of the other storage providers. So that's a cool link that we have. Speaking of link, like that? That was. I'm particularly proud of that transition. So Ryan, LinkFat.
Why don't you drive the demo while I talk about it?
Yeah,
but
sure.
One of the tools that I've been working with lately has been the LinkPad tool that was built by Joe Albahari, who I believe wrote C# in a Nutshell, a book. Mm-hmm. And this tool really fell out of that book. But what he's been doing is he's actually modified this to not only work with Link and run arbitrary pieces of .NET code, but it actually connects to all sorts of services, including SQL Azure.
Yep.
So I found this tool to be fantastic for prototyping Link queries, to also run T-SQL queries against SQL Azure. And you'll notice here, as you're typing, you're getting this IntelliSense about the different tables, pulling up the bandwidth, for instance. It's a fantastic tool. If you want it, you can click that SQL button there, and you can see the actual underlying SQL that's generated as part of the automatic link context. And it's just a really great way to quickly prototype your link queries before you actually go in and write it and commit it into your code. It's fantastic. Speaking of SQL Azure, we also have some additional news. I don't know if a lot of folks know this, but the SQL providers that ship out of the box when you go in and just, if you were to F5 a normal install non-Windows Azure project, there's always an option to pre-create or create that ASP.NET provider database, which does things like the membership provider, the roles provider, and things like that. Out of the box, because of the way the products have kind of evolved, and SQL Azure came obviously much later than SQL Express, they don't work right now. So out of the box, that currently don't work. So what we have is this KB article that links to some scripts you can download from Code Gallery. And those scripts are actually created so that it will fix the little incompatibilities, the minor things that crop up, and allow you to load those databases. So a person that downloads these scripts and installs it one time during the registration of their application will actually have the schema and all the necessary information there to use SQL Azure as the provider backing for your roles and your profiles and everything like that. Great tip if you don't know about it. If you're not interested in using that, there's also providers for Windows Azure Table Storage as well. So you can use either one of these.
Cool. There's another neat little thing that I found over on the Visit Mix site called Incarnate. Or maybe it's Incarnate. I suppose it depends on, you know, is it a verb? Is it is an adjective?
I think with a carne in there has something to do with meat.
That's true. I think that's Spanish, right? Okay.
Yeah.
So this is all about meat. But here's what it really does. I'm going to type in Smarks and press Find Me, and there I am on Twitter. So what this does is it just lets people look up very easily, based on a username, what their avatar is from various sites, from Facebook, Twitter, right, MySpace, and other things like that. So the idea here is to put it on your blog, for example, so that when people comment, they can go find the picture of them and get their little their avatar there without having to figure out what the URL is.
Not having to upload their avatar every single time to a different site and manage that.
Exactly. And so we wouldn't be talking about this if it weren't for the fact that it runs on Windows Azure. So so this is just a little use of Windows Azure to host this thing. It's actually, it's hosting some UI here, but there's also this REST service. So this is also being hosted in Windows Azure, and it gives you all this functionality, but with, you know, sort of a JSON and REST endpoint so that you can easily integrate this onto some other site. And if you'll notice up here in the address bar, they're using this URL, incarnate.visitmix.com, which is CNAME mapped to a, I think it's incarnate.cloudapp.net. We figured out by by reverse engineering their CNAME record process.
Yeah, it was tricky.
It was tough. Ryan got it in the first guess. And so they're using a custom domain map to Windows Azure. And we've talked about that before, but I don't know that everybody realizes that in Windows Azure, you don't have to just live with that cloudapp.net domain. You can use whatever you want. And so here's an example of that.
Right. Well, so what do we got for the feature now? Why don't you give us the intro and the demo for worker roles running HTTP processes?
Okay, Ryan, this week we're going to talk about the worker roles with endpoints. And so basically in Windows Azure, you have to model your application. So you've got some application. I'm going to draw a big box for that. This is your app. And so in Windows Azure, your application is a collection of components that we call roles, and some information about how they're configured and how they talk to the internet. And so the normal architecture that you see is a web role and maybe a worker role and a load balancer that routes traffic from the internet into that web role. And so your HTTP traffic is coming in. It's coming to the web role. The worker role, in the meanwhile, is sitting back here spinning and doing some work, but it's not receiving traffic from the internet. And this is the usual thing that people are doing on Windows Azure. It's also pretty much the only option you had when we announced our first CTP. So back in 2008, this is what the world looked like in Windows Azure. You could have web roles and worker roles. Web roles got traffic from the internet and used IIS to host websites. And worker roles did not get traffic from the internet, but could call out if they wanted to. Okay, this world has now changed. And so ever since, I don't know, when was this available? I guess only at PDC, huh? So it's not been a huge amount of time, but for the past 4 or 5 months, I guess, you've been able to have arbitrary roles in sort of arbitrary configurations where anyone can talk to anyone else. Anyone can receive traffic from the internet via a load balancer. And this notion of web roles and worker roles now really just means a web role maps to IIS and a worker role doesn't. And so really this is the only difference. So now if you declare a web role, it means IIS is going to be configured for you and it's going to handle all the incoming traffic. If you use a worker role, You can have internet traffic if you want, but IIS isn't going to be there. And so you need to listen to that traffic yourself. So you can just make a direct connection with TCP. And so you can open a TCP listener, or you can run some other kind of application. And the demo that I'm going to show today is going to be of running a different web server in a worker role. So I've got Visual Studio open here with a worker role that I wrote that does something very simple. It runs something called Mongoose. And Mongoose is a single file executable web server. It's really lightweight, and what it does is it just serves files out of the directory where it sits. So I chose Mongoose just because it's the simplest thing to show and it's the easiest to get. It's also very small. It's less than 60 kilobytes compiled. We've done the same thing with other web servers like Apache or Tomcat for Java applications, and the process is the same. So if you look at any of our solution accelerators that talk about running Apache or running Tomcat or even things like Memcached, they're all working in pretty much the same way. So here I'm going to show you really what the anatomy of that thing is. So the first thing we're going to do is we're going to go to the settings for the worker role. And we're going to add an endpoint. And this is how we're going to configure our incoming traffic. So I'm going to call this worker in. And we're going to make it an input endpoint. The other option is internal. We'll actually probably cover that in a later show, but that's for traffic within my application. So this is going to come in over the load balancer. I'm going to set the protocol to TCP because I'm just going to use a raw connection. I just want the port to be open. And I'm going to set the port to 80, which is, of course, where HTTP traffic comes. So this is what the settings look like. I've given it a name. I've said it's an input endpoint. It's of type TCP, and it's on port 80.
And it's important to note that the TCP, it's still okay to have that, even though you're going to accept HTTP.
Absolutely.
So that still works.
The other setting is HTTP, and that sort of... I'm frankly fuzzy on the details of the difference between making it HTTP there and making it TCP on a worker on a web role. Rather, it's got to be an HTTP endpoint for IIS.
For IIS, yeah.
In a worker endpoint, it has to do with whether HTTP sys
is involved. Sure.
And so I'm usually using TCP when I'm not using IIS. I'm usually using TCP to just avoid that and just get the direct connection with the port.
Right.
So I've done this here. That's also, of course, just a fancy way of editing the service definition file. So the same line is right here, but in XML instead. Okay, so now that I've done that, I just need to use it. And so if you'll notice, I've got this little comment in the code here. I've hard-coded a port here, but that's not going to be the right port when we're in the cloud. So in the cloud, I've said port 80 is where the traffic comes into the load balancer. Windows Azure is going to tell me on my virtual machine what port I should listen on, right? So there's a mapping from that external port to the internal port that I'm going to be listening on. Right. And so I need to use a little bit of code here to find out what port I really should be listening to. So I'm going to use the role environment. I'm going to get the current role instance, and I'm going to get an enumeration of the endpoints on my instance. And we called ours worker in. And from there, I can just get the IP endpoint. And from there, I can get the port. So that's it. So just a little bit of code that calls the Windows Azure API to find out what port I should be listening on. And then the rest of this code really does something very simple. It launches the executable Mongoose 2.8. And it passes in a command line parameter of what ports Mongoose can listen on, multiple ports. In this case, we only have one, but what port we should listen on. And so it's just passing this as a command line argument. So this is just like me going to the command prompt and saying mongoose-port.
Now, I noticed you have in here the environment variable role root. So then you're adding together some paths to get to the Mongoose directory.
Yep.
And I know that a lot of folks don't know about this environment variable role root. And it's one of those things that until you actually try to get something running up in the cloud, this can actually bite you if you don't know how to do it correctly.
This line, we were talking about this earlier, this line, despite seeming sort of trivial, it's just constructing the path, it's actually probably the trickiest line to get right here and the most important to get right. Yeah. And I'm going to put this up on my blog, so people will be able to just jump from this show over to my blog and see this code in full, and I'll put a little commentary there about this. But what this is doing is this environment variable is set by Windows Azure and points to the root directory of where your code is, where your role lives.
Right.
And actually, it's under that role root in a directory called AppRoot. And so under there, you'll find everything that's in your Visual Studio solution or whatever there. And I've made a directory under there called Mongoose, which is where I'm putting Mongoose and the files that it's going to serve. We should probably point out that this is here too, so that I've added to my solution. This is important, because if you just sort of stick it there, it's not going to be part of the build process. It's not going to make it to the cloud.
Right.
So I've added as my solution this directory Mongoose, and I've added two files, index.html and mongoose2.8.exe.
You did them as content too, right?
I've marked them as content, and I've said always copy to the output directory. And so this is making sure that those do make it as part of the build process.
Right.
And then I'll find them under this path that we've sort of constructed here. So then I'm just starting a new process. I'm sending the working directory to that same path so that when Mongoose looks in the local directory for files, it finds them. And then I'm starting the process, and then I'm waiting for it to exit, because the model of a worker role is run forever. So I'm going to launch Mongoose. It's going to listen for traffic. It's hopefully going to keep running forever. If it ever doesn't, I want to throw an exception, in this case with the cute little remark that Mongoose quit on me, and that will cause Windows Azure to recycle my role. So Windows Azure at that point will know something is wrong because I've exited from this run method, which I'm never supposed to do as a worker role unless there's an error. So that indicates to Windows Azure that there's an error. Then the role will get restarted. So if Mongoose crashes for some reason, then this will just make sure that it restarts. So that's it. And then I'm going to press F5 here, and we're going to run it locally in the development fabric. And it's going to spin up two instances, because I've set to two instances. And we'll see as it gets started up here that we're actually going to be able to see that Mongoose is running in two little command windows. So here they are. And this is the output from Mongoose, just saying that it started. Look at the port number. It started on 5100 in this one and 5101. In the other window. And so that's that mapping that Windows Azure has done. They're both being load balanced on port 80, but they're being mapped to internally 5101 or 5100.
So we have an internal software load balancer actually at this point to emulate the cloud.
Right. So locally it's a software load balancer. In the cloud it's a physical
hardware
load balancer. So if we look here, this is the mapping in the development fabric, and it does confirm that we're on port 80. Remember, if you run a few different services or you've already got something listening on port 80, this might be 81, 82, depending on,
sure,
on what it is. So that's why I checked there. But so now we should be able to just browse to 127.0.0.1. That's it, actually, because port 80 is the default. And there it is. We've got a little web page. That's the index.html that I put in that folder. And we have the same thing running, here it is, in the cloud. So I've just deployed that to the cloud as
well. Did you use Expression Studio to create this?
This is my many years as a web designer. I actually do, on the side, I do web design.
Yeah.
So if you like what you see here,
for all of our
viewers, you know, if you think, my God, that's the most beautiful, simplistic design I've ever seen. Just drop me an email.
This is HTML5, I think.
And I can, it's using all the latest web standards and the H1 tag that's new.
Yeah.
And it's all there. So anyway, so this is here. If you are watching this video and it is not near the publish date of this video, don't be dismayed when you go to this cloud app, workerinput.cloudapp.net, and it's not there, because I'm probably going to take down the demo in about a week anyway. So,
but it's easy enough to replicate.
With some work, I could recreate.
I mean, this web page in particular.
Yes.
Can you post the source to this on your blog for us?
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. So I hope everybody understands that, you know, worker roles don't necessarily mean that they don't get traffic from the internet. And so a worker role can receive traffic from the internet. You're on your own because you don't have IIS to listen to that traffic. You
can
launch something like Apache or Mongoose or some other server like this, or you can just use a TCP listener or WCF or anything you want.
Right.
You just need to find out what port to listen on and then start listening.
That's great. That brings us to the tip of the week.
Tip of the week.
Tip of the week. Should we get a shaking graphic at some point to yell tip of the week?
We should have something with like an obnoxious like horn honking or something like that. We'll work on that for next week.
Maybe next episode.
Maybe.
All right, so the tip of the week this week is actually how to calculate the size of your database in SQL Azure and the size of the objects within it. Now, what I have Steve here showing on screen is LinkPad, which we saw earlier. And in LinkPad, you can execute arbitrary queries. So if you go ahead and take a look at the script that we have, the first one simply selects the reserved page count and does a little bit of math from the partition stats table, the DB partition stats view, I should say. And when you execute this, you're going to get the size in megabytes. In this case, I have the AdventureWorks database, which I've uploaded previously. I know everyone uses Northwind, but I'm going wild here. I'm using AdventureWorks. And you can see that I have 2.828125 megabytes, which to most people is right around 2.8 megabytes. Now, the other result set, if you look at the query, is just a simple grouping of the same thing, but this time grouping by the object name. And in this case, you'll see all the tables within the particular database, and you can see the relative sizes of them. And this gets important, of course, when you talk about the size of your database and the fact that we have 1 gig and 10 gig database sizes, and you want to kind of track where you're at and think about how you're going to partition, or just you know, for your own management purposes, see what tables are starting to get large and this kind of thing. This is a very simple query that you can run that'll give you that data accurately. I will post this out on my blog or link it to it from the show, and so you should be able to pull this down. It's nothing too tricky. But with that, we're wrapped up this week, and I'd like to thank everyone who's joined us. And again, you can interact with the show at CloudCoverShow at Twitter or the Wildcat BBS. We'll keep that up for a while.
Yeah, good. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks.